chat with I'll have a chat with the tax clerk, right, and the manager of finance, and just see, like, as I said, right now it's May.
Yep.
And we have done that,
yep,
with a number of properties. That putting that in as a must or a shall means that she absolutely will have to create,
yeah,
these large lists for each tax sale, and yeah, it, I'll have a look and see what they think.
Sure.
Speaking of tax accounts, so we have 15,000 assessment accounts. I think it's probably about just under 15,000. $11 million in taxes we bill each year. We have the 12% per year interest rate. That hasn't changed in a number of years. I don't know if that's, you know, helpful or not helpful. Or some municipalities are considerably less than 12%, but I don't think that's the direction. You want there to be some kind of motivation, so I wouldn't go lower. And taxes can be paid at the bank, of course, mail here at the office. And, of course, we do have the e-post as well. And when just before the tax bills are generated this year, we'll put another push on the promotion and the advertisement of that e-post, where you can give us your email address, and rather than having the bill mailed to you, paper mailed to you in the mail, you'll get an email notification, and you can click on a link within that notification and pay directly through your online banking. So it worked really well for the overseas accounts. We were paid in a matter of days, whereas normally that was sort of a 60-day lag.
Nice.
By the time the mail was back and forth.
Yep.
What's unfortunate is that we only had uptake from about 115 overseas accounts, but you know, we'll promote it again, and hopefully people pick up on that, because that's definitely in everyone's best interest, and you know, that does make the cash flow come in quicker when you can do that.
Okay, Jennifer, can I ask a question on when they go to pay a bill, can they use Visa?
Nope.
Okay. Because it's a charge then.
Well, see, we lose that 3% right,
exactly,
off the top, right? So no, we don't accept credit cards for property tax payments. So.
So we have $11 million in taxes. So if you paid it through credit card, about
3%.
3% of $11 million. You're going to have to raise taxes.
That
I'm
would
helping.
Affect the tax
not
rate.
Not helping these people
that
either by creating their debt in other areas for them, right?
That's right.
That's not a, yeah.
You don't take from this credit card to pay another credit,
yeah,
card.
That's right.
It's all about assisting
our... We're promoting financial...
Responsibility. Yes, we are.
Okay. But you're penalizing those that are financially responsible who want the points.
Yeah.
That's true.
But,
yeah. Okay.
So there are other monthly billings. It's not our tax bill, of course, that once a year in June, of course. And we do have other monthly billings. We have Hillsview Acres. We bill the resident board. We have Solid Waste Management Facility. You saw the tipping fee schedule change on the agenda earlier. Those are billed monthly according to the bills of lading that come in from our landfill. Queen's Place users, we have a number of users that have monthly accounts. We bill cash receivables. And of course, the miscellaneous, like the dog taxes and development permits and advertising. A lot of the development permits and planning, they make a payment up front. Then we deduct from that all the costs incurred throughout the development permit process and planning, advisory, that kind of thing, those planning permits. And then they're refunded the difference in the end. So this is the graph that I had in the budget presentation last year, just so you can see where we sit in relation to other municipalities. So towns, so District 13's tax rate is $1.92. And that's where we are. That's where we are in that range.
I'm sorry, what's that red?
The red is us.
I don't have a towns. I don't have a sheet that says towns.
Is it on the back of another
page?
No, I don't have that.
There's a few pages you got we don't have.
Right?
Really? Well, that just makes me special. So if you're looking at this chart, and it wouldn't give you on your printout anyway, that the very first item is Andy Ganish, and that's $2.62.
Who's the one in red there?
And then we're in red at 302.
So Liverpool's the second lowest commercial rate.
Second lowest commercial rate.
Are you putting everybody else's tax rate on a level footing? From how they,
that's the
how
other
they
piece.
Present
it. Area rate or not?
That's the other piece of this, too. We
this
have a lot
a
of other services included in our tax rate that other municipalities, on top of this rate, charge separately for, yeah.
But
a lot of places charge separate for sewer and hydrant.
So what you're showing in those other ones are just the tax rate that they advertise as their tax rate with nothing else included.
We don't know what all is included in there
oh.
and what isn't, for
right.
sure. There's a number of them, though. Like, for instance, municipalities of Lunenburg have those various area rates for their fire departments
yeah.
that are separate and above from the tax rate that
right.
they would advertise as their base rate. But
so most of the towns, the rates you see there are the actual rates. There's a couple that have user charges that would be over and above. But most of those are pretty consistent. When you get to the rurals, that's a nightmare.
That's where it is.
Yeah.
Because if you look at like Chester's is like 69 cents. But when you add on their area rates, it's like $1.12.
Right.
Yeah.
But this is just
it's hard
your
to compare.
Tax rate.
This is just what the public advertises.
Right, gotcha.
This
so
is the advertised commercial rate.
So if they everybody else put their rate and everything else added into it like we do, we would probably be, we would be the lowest then, wouldn't we?
You wouldn't be lower than any minute.
No? How do they get to be so low?
They have a
yeah.
They have a university.
Electric utility subsidized.
They have a university.
But they have a university.
They have a university.
Yeah? A not-for-profit, so what the heck? Like.
Yeah, so theirs is $2.61, and ours is $3.02, and at the top there, Clark's Harbor is $5.58.
Jeez.
Councilor McLeod, you have a question?
No, not right now.
Okay.
Thanks.
And so then rurals.
So can you go back to that?
Maybe.
That's what I did, and that's what it gave me.
People are concerned about the neighbors.
Mm. Oh, good. That's what's helpful.
So, the home base is pretty close to us. Annapolis Royal, town of Lunenburg. Up to them when you get down, like Bridgewater's way up there.
Yarmouth.
Way up there. Lockport is massive. Clark's Harbor is massive.
Wow.
Ooh.
Not the last
you heard.
Anyway, but
can
so
we get a
cannabis at lunch?
Yeah.
So we're very competitive with the other ones. So when people say the rates are too high or whatever, if you're in Liverpool,
no, they're not.
Liverpool.
I know, and that's what I tell people. But I don't have. Can I get a copy of that piece of paper, please? That
I can
slide.
Give you the printout of the numbers that came that made that graph, the actual amount.
Graph is more.
We'll give you the graph.
Visual
graph.
Is more.
But you can see we're extremely competitive. So
yeah.
People say, well, why is there no business that's got to lower taxes?
I know.
It's not about the tax rate.
We don't have to.
It's not.
But this is residential. Oh, no, sorry. This is commercial.
Commercial.
Right. Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
Slide
excellent. I'd like to email that to all the businesses in town.
And I might have deterred upcoming commercial appeal just based on the fact that they didn't realize that our tax rate was so low and
mm-hmm.
their appeal was so much less than the expectations would have been because they have businesses in other counties and,
yeah.
and their tax rates would be higher and they thought what they were appealing was a greater amount of money than what it actually is because our rate is so much lower than their expectation was.
Councilor McLeod has a question.
So Jennifer, when this is provided, if information is provided to the public, then how do we explain to them? Like they, so the other town, the municipalities do not say, well, this is combined of.
Yes, some of them might not be as inclusive as
yeah.
our rate
yeah.
is.
But what I'm saying is we always have to explain it. So is there any other way other than having to explain it that we can show them?
Yeah,
that?
I can put that. There's a disclosure on the table that I created
mm-hmm.
to make the graph that
okay.
says Queens rate is all inclusive of area and general rate.
Mm-hmm.
Many rural municipalities charge such services as fire protection and street lighting in it as an area rate that may not be included in
mm-hmm.
these amounts.
Or could you say like the every community has a base rate, do they not, and then they add that on top of it?
No.
No? Okay.
All the towns
for the most part are just one flat rate.
One flat, okay.
Right.
Just trying to get away of the public understanding that we are really, really in that level, that bracket.
As far as Liverpool,
yeah,
the District 13 rate,
right.
for sure.
And,
then
the simplest way is to say provincially published numbers show that the former town of Liverpool is the second lowest urban rate in Nova Scotia.
Okay.
Yeah.
Commercial.
We're second to the lowest anyways. There's not really any need to, it's when we're high that you want to explain that nobody else puts their area rates in there, but we do.
Yeah, that's true.
Getting the true figure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so then again, as we said, rural, we're in the middle. So we're
Still great. I love that.
We're still good, right?
We're still good.
We're $2.14.
And this is where you get into area rates.
So Antigonish is at $1.46.
Like I said, Chester's showing here at $1.55 or something like that. And Chester has lots of area rates. So there's actually up here between the calculation.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And there's some other ones like that too that have like Argyle and all this supplier rate of $0.06, I think. Which isn't an area rate, but they call it an area rate, which mm-hmm. is applied to everything.
And Municipality District of Lunenburg have various fire department rates that would be added to.
That.
Some of them could be as much as 26 or 27 cents
mm-hmm.
on top of that
uh-huh.
number. Some of them are 11 or 12 cents, but
ours
some of them
is
are
all
high 20s.
Inclusive,
ours is all inclusive.
What you see is what you get. What you see is what you pay.
No.
Except for Brooklyn.
Unless it has an area rate.
Brooklyn has the 6 cents, but we only have the one community area right now,
yeah.
which
that's
is the Brooklyn rate.
Though.
Both.
Oh.
That 6 cents goes on both commercial
oh,
and residential.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay, thank you.
Recreation and cemetery.
Right.
Community. And that Cumberland rate is 276. That's the last one on the chart. So then we will look at residential. In Liverpool, it's $1.92.
That's where you want to say.
Lockport's 236.
Right.
That's the higher one on the graph there. And then the first one, the lower rate, is Antigonish again at $1.09. So even still, if you're looking at us being closer to the top, we're $1.92 as opposed to the one that's the highest, which is $2.36. So we still got quite a difference
yeah.
between the
but
highest.
But again, a lot of the ones below us aren't including
in the
towns area rates.
The towns probably
towns
are.
In the towns they are?
In the towns it would be.
Urban,
there,
yes. Rural, no.
There aren't many towns that have area rates. It's
okay.
just one rate.
Okay.
So the challenge for this one, though, is that we're right now, Liverpool's at $1.90-something.
$1.92.
And to get down to the middle, down here, you're going to have to reduce it by 30 cents.
Oh, right.
To get to the middle.
Yeah, that is a bit more of a challenge.
And when, so I see town. So that's, when you talk about Lunenburg, that's Lunenburg County on commercial rate to rural on town.
Right.
You see,
this is
I
the
see.
Town of Lunenburg.
We don't have that one.
We don't have that one either. Okay.
We don't have the towns.
We went.
There's a couple other slides.
So we'll give you the split. We'll send you the slide.
Yeah,
see,
thanks.
Lunenburg Town is low, but there's lots of reasons why they're low.
Well, they all have, all those first four all have private utilities, right? Private electric utilities.
Exactly.
Mahone Bay does.
Probably subsidize
make
that
money.
Can we
yeah.
get one of those? Can we get one?
Well, we
Liverpool used to have one solar.
What?
Liverpool had one solar.
Oh, bad idea.
But we have the benefit.
What?
We have the Nova Scotia
Power
grant, right? Which you know,
the
for the dams, the hydro dams that we have. I mean, for the infrastructure, we have a grant, which is around $700,000.
So when they do the improvements, why doesn't that help us with our taxes?
If they were to make substantial improvements on the dams,
mm-hmm.
our piece of the pie would increase because the infrastructure that is in our county would be valued higher, and that would give us a bigger piece of that Nova Scotia Power grant in lieu that they pay. The province, so yeah. If they were to make substantial improvements to their infrastructure in our area, our grant in lieu would increase. I know.
Not yet,
so rural, residential. Again, we're roughly the same as we were with the commercial rate. So we're $1.04 for our residential districts 1 to 12 rate. At the bottom there is Guysboro at 66 cents. And Digby at the top of the line is $1.30, so there's still, you know, quite a substantial gap between the top of the scale and where Queens is as far as rules. But there would be additional area rates added to that, as we've been discussing.
That's commercial residential rates rural. Okay.
That slide you do have, right?
Yeah, so if you look at area rates, that one would be next, because
that'd be all over
the
board.
A lot of the rules have area rates that don't show this. Like I said, Chester again down bottom, but Chester's got like 20 cents in area rates, but not close to over a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they'd be up where we are.
And Lunenburg County, again, with the fire departments, there's a huge range of area rates for those, all those various fire departments.
Okay.
So we have water and sewer accounts. Our water rates are regulated by Utility and Review Board.
I don't have that slide either.
We get utility rate consumption.
The water fees.
We have the graph.
And then we have a sewer bylaw for this, yeah, rate chart. We have a sewer bylaw that sets the rates for our various sewer systems. So if you're looking at where we are in the graph as far as consumption, we have 96 cents is our consumption rate. That Victoria County at the top of the scale there is $3.22 per cubic meter. And then Digby, town of Digby on the bottom there is 44 cents. Yeah, that would cost me. So, you know, we're right in the middle there. Over the last few years, it's been a bit of an analytical process in creating the utility budget, you know, because we don't want to raise rates and we want to maintain as we, and it's been working fine. There's been a very, very small surplus, but you know, we've been managing to balance the budget over the years. And then that's starting to improve now that we had some specialized equipment that had to be depreciated over a very short time period. And that depreciation directly affects the bottom line of the water utility covered by the user fees. Now that that equipment is gone, the depreciation will start to decrease, and so that utility budget will start to come back around now, and the rates should be self-sufficient for a number of years going forward.
So you don't see any reason for us to increase our utility rates for at least the foreseeable future?
No, I don't for the foreseeable future. I think we'll be fine and self-sufficient, yeah. I think the water utility can look after itself for a number of years going forward, so. And then, so the 5/8 meter charge, this is where we sit. So there's a quarterly fee for the rental of the water meter. And so ours is $38.23.
I don't really know what one you copied, but it wasn't that one.
I just sent the PowerPoint presentation to be printed and distributed, so. It existed.
Okay.
It does exist.
You'll send it all to us.
I will.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, we only got the important stuff.
Well, yeah, as long as you got the important stuff. Inverness County is at the bottom of that list at $22.16. And at the top there, Victoria County is $109.92 for their 5/8 meter quarterly charge. And ours is $39.23.
$109.92.
I know.
Every 3 weeks?
Every 3 months?
Every 3 months. So the Municipal Government Act states that council shall appoint a municipal auditor, and the auditor will report to council. And so they review all of our various transactions throughout the year, and they verify that the money that was spent in the municipality was spent on items that are approved for expenditure according to the MGA.
And is that the company we just moved to?
So Grant Thornton is the auditors this year. It was Bella Bovino for 3 years.
Yeah.
Yep. And prior to that,
was for how long?
3 years, Bella Bovino.
No, for Grant Thornton.
We've appointed them for this year, and then it's a renewable each year for the next 3 years.
So why did we stop Bella?
Their contract was for 3 years, and then we RFP'd again. So we went to tender again. It's always good, you know, to change things up and have that whole different set of eyes, you know, different set of viewpoints. So the auditor's report, they give you a detailed accounting of the municipal finances this year, and as I said, they verify, they do their sample testing, they verify that the amounts that were spent in the municipality were spent on what the municipality has the authority to spend that money on. How do I hear? The council shall be the audit committee, that is the MGA. Now, recently we've made the change to include a member of the public. Bruce Inglis responded to our request for applicants, and so he forms a part of the audit committee as well as the rest of council. And so the financial statements are reviewed with the audit committee by the auditor, and there's an evaluation of internal controls, there's a management letter presented, there's a review of the conduct and the adequacy of the audit, and Any matters arising under the audit as may appear to require follow-up, the auditors in the next year will refer to that information and then follow through on anything that was brought up at the previous audit. So our accounting software is SAP, it's a provincial platform. We were able to get in on board a number of years ago with the general ledger, and then more recently, 10 years ago, I guess, however recent 10 years ago is, they subsidized the add-on of additional modules, and we added in our tax and our water piece, and our tax and water are fully integrated into the SAP and the general ledger accounting system. So it's a really good system. It works really well. It's probably a bit more than the municipality really needs, but you know, it's always good to have that extra detail, right? So the SAP system is fully backed up off-site at the headquarters or the management thereof. It used to be managed specifically by the province, and then they contracted out to IBM, but they maintain security protocols. We have a secure data pack line for our accounting system, and all the information is backed up every evening, and then there's protocols in place for the reinstatement of any of that data should anything alter.
Does that mean every entry that's made here on site then gets backed up? You have a separate entry for all of the systems?
Yeah, the entire system is backed up so that it could be downloaded back into our system at any given point in time and reinstate everything as if it had never been deleted.
Okay. That's dealing with all the accounting.
Everything.
Everything
related to our accounting software, yeah. As I said, tax and water utility are also in that system now.
Okay.
And then all of our general ledger, so all of our financial statement information is all included in this one accounting software platform.
Okay.
Is this the piece that Queen's Place is not into and you have to enter their stuff into it?
Yeah, they've got a separate server. All their information is backed up, but no, we bring all the information over and we key it separately
into
the SAP system. So that's actually one of our internal controls for our risk management.
Person?
No, we maintain the entire accounting software system here on site, and that gives us that additional level of security protocol that it is only able to be accessed from the admin building through the secure data pack line. So there aren't any plans in the future to make that SAP system accessible from a remote site. Because it's part of our internal control.
Isn't that causing extra work and extracting information that our board needs information and we always have to,
But you'd have to ask for it to be printed from the system there as opposed to asking for it to be printed from the system here.
But it's not always updated, is it? Is there an issue with
that? I think you're talking, you're talking about an operational issue of double key punching.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is the software issue, which is null and void, really.
Yeah, we're not going to.
One server print.
Yeah.
Same report. It's a matter of who prints it.
It's just a matter of who prints it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think the other issue is an operational issue, with just called procedures. Procedures issue. That's what it comes.
They have that separate QuickBooks Sage accounting system over there,
yes,
which gives them the opportunity to be able to print receipts, but also anything keyed and any cash that's taken in at Queen's Place creates a transaction or a journal within that system. And at the end of the day, when you go to balance your deposit, you simply print off all of those transactions and journal entries that made up that deposit, and that gives you your balance and verification and gives you that opportunity to reconcile.
Mm-hmm.
And then that deposit comes over here to be keyed.
You enter in your system.
And then it's entered in our system. And then that is another verification process where it's the opportunity to review that deposit information again.
Okay. What about
verified
stats?
Rates.
How are there stats on that Sage system as well, or is that just accounting?
They keep their stats on access. So as far as usage,
mm-hmm,
by customer,
mm-hmm,
for ice rental hours, for instance, Yeah, that's, it's all separately keyed, but it would be anyway, because that's not that, that's more of an Excel function or a data platform function than it is accounting. We just make sure that we know the total, the revenue offsetting the expenses, yeah. So, some of the changes in and around finance and tracking over the past year, council expense reports, you're all fully versed in. That was one of the changes that was made by the province last year. So we now, we have that more detailed spreadsheet and record of your expenses. And those are tallied, they're reimbursed to you as submitted, of course, but they're tallied on a quarterly basis, and then they're produced on our website for viewing, so that it's public information. Council expense reports are public information now, and that detailed expense report that you fill out for your reimbursement is now actually, you know, pictured online, so you can.
Oh, I noticed that.
Sort of, yeah. That transparency.
Feel naked.
I know, right? Violate.
Why, yeah. It's weird.
Be careful what you write.
Yes.
And we talked a little bit about this earlier, but the collection of our accounts receivable, we've really stepped up on our collections procedures. Taxes, of course, is one thing. We have the multiple tax sales, and we're taking considerably more properties to tax sale at each sale than we had been before, you know, rather than 10 or 12, where we start with a list of probably 30 or 40, and it's a smaller list by the time we get to the tax sale process, which is a good thing because it means that they've paid their bills and have removed themselves from the list.
Paid the bills or we pay points?
Paid their bills. Once you reach that tax sale point and we have put all that time and effort and we have paid the money for that title search report, you have to pay in order to get off the list. The 30-day notice process that there's a tax sale pending and you will be on the list, there's an opportunity there to make a payment arrangement, and we have made some substantial payment arrangements at that stage in the process as well. But once you reach that 60-day mark and it's been posted for tax sale notice and there's a date set for the sale, you have to pay it in full before you're removed from that tax sale list. Of course, we have other receivables that we deal with collections-wise on a regular basis. We have the landfill receivables. We have the opportunity to cut you off of the privileges of using the disposal at the landfill facility until your bills are paid. Water utility, we have the opportunity to shut off your water if your bills aren't paid. We have Hillsview Acres, of course, as well, where we have collection processes in place, but we won't kick you out if you don't pay your bill. So we make every effort to, you know, multiple phone calls and multiple contacts, and we have payment arrangements for a number of those accounts that were kind of larger and outstanding at the end of the year last year as well, or that have transferred to other facilities.
We would also, what we were talking before about the tax exemption, we would not allow someone to get a tax exemption if they have to pay the bill before they can actually apply for the tax exemption anyway, don't they?
They have to pay the bill before they can apply for the provincial tax exemption. And
so they can't get either one unless they're paying the bill.
Ours they can get, but of course those are usually smaller amounts, and that $250 goes a long way to lowering that amount and then continuing with payment arrangement. We will allow
so
you.
So they can still get the $250, but they have to pay.
Well, it's
down.
In our best interest to lower their bill.
Pay
which,
down their bill.
Yeah,
which
pay,
is what they're
pays down their
to
bill.
Do, get it and pay it down. Okay.
Yeah. And just that's makes it easier for them to make a monthly payment arrangement that's more affordable if we take that $250 off.
So there's incentive to apply.
There is.
Everybody's not on a payment. It's on a payment arrangement, does actually take their $250.
Well,
if they qualify.
If they qualify.
Yeah, gotcha.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then, of course, our sewer charges form a first lien on the property, the same as property taxes would. So you can tax sale for sewer even if there are no property taxes outstanding. Normally the case is that both would be outstanding if they were. But there are some mortgages that are paying property taxes, and so there is still that chance that sewer is outstanding. But the mortgage is paying the property taxes and they aren't outstanding. Although most of the banks will actually step up and pay the sewer if it's outstanding, because they don't want to risk that tax sale piece when they're holding a mortgage on the property, of course. So we found that a number of years ago.
And people don't get to pick and choose what they pay, when they pay money. There's a legislative requirement of how payments get applied to accounts, so they can't say, well, I'm not paying that sewer charge because I don't agree with the rate or something like that. They can't do that. They pay us money, automatically gets applied to the systematic process.
Right.
They can't pick and choose how the payments get applied.
And so that actually, good point, that's another change we've made recently. And any receivable accounts outstanding with the Region of Queens that don't form a first lien or don't allow us to shut off water, or don't, we apply any payments made to the region to those accounts first, and then we apply it to those that form the first lien. So if you have an outstanding landfill receivable and you pay us what you call property taxes, we'll apply it to the outstanding landfill receivable first, and then we will apply your payments going forward to your property taxes.
Oh, landfill gets first and then property? And
miscellaneous then receivable, then landfill, then water consumption.
But definitely you could be paying money, but still have your water shut off.
Water consumption is another one that's paid first.
Oh.
We don't have a lot where there's both water and landfill, but water consumption would be paid before sewer and before property taxes.
So the things that we can't collect for without going to court, we try to do that first.
Right.
So if you owe taxes, we can always sell your property at tax sales. We're not too worried about that. If you owe money to landfill, all we can do is cut you off the landfill and throw it in the woods.
Okay, gotcha, yeah.
And so it's to our benefit to,
not even kidding.
To our benefit to apply it to the landfill, because
right,
we know we can always get the money at the tax sale.
Right.
But if we apply it to the tax sale, we're never going to get the landfill money.
Right.
And then we're going to write off, and everybody in this room is going to have to pay for that.
And we'll send you a letter telling you that that's what we're doing before we do it.
Who wins if they're not paying their taxes and they're not paying their mortgage? The bank and us? Who wins a tax, like, who gets first?
We would get first preference over the bank.
We can take it to tax sale.
We can take it to tax sale, and most often the bank doesn't want to lose their investment because they have an outstanding mortgage on the property.
Yeah.
So a lot of banks will step up and pay that difference and add it into what's owed to them because they don't want to lose what they have as collateral. Because if we sell it at tax sale,
then it's theirs.
The mortgage is vacated.
And they have to keep paying the taxes on it, the bank.
Mm-hmm. No, the new purchaser does. The bank loses their capital. They lose their collateral for the mortgage if it sells at tax sale, because all encumbrances are wiped out at
right,
a tax sale.
Okay. So I think, whichever correct or wrong, the federal government gets first crack, provincial government second, municipal government third, then probably lien holders like the bank gets fourth, and then Joe contractor and local business, they get nothing unless there's something.
So any of those people that have a registered encumbrance or a registered lien on a property can show up at the tax sale, purchase the property, and then have their collateral back and then, you know, resell it themselves. But if it's allowed to go at tax sale and someone else purchases it, then they lose out on their lien. So it's in their best to just step out. And then their only option after that is to apply if there's a surplus. So once we take our taxes back, if the purchaser has paid more money than is owing to us, that goes in that surplus account, and then there's an opportunity for those with a registered lien to apply to have a piece of that portion or a piece of that surplus returned to them, in line with everyone else, of course, in that priority list.
But it takes time.
It takes time.
They can't apply for so many years.
Well, they can apply pretty much immediately if they know.
We just have to hold it for 20 years.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
We can't take it back out of prison.
Oh, we can't take it.
So we talked about the post-closure liability there, where we have to maintain a fund necessary if at some point in the future, 30 or 40 years from now, we're required to close down the landfill. There's a certain amount, a cost to close it or to properly cover it, and then there's additional costs to monitor it ongoing as a contaminated site. So we have an amount that was prepared as a calculation according to a cost in future dollars, and then based on an amount per tonnage, the capacity that the landfill would ultimately hold prior to closure. And of course, there's never really going to be an end in sight because we will constantly be expanding the cells, but that's a public sector accounting board requirement that you do that calculation. We verify that calculation each year. When we move the tipping fees, we also move the amount that we retain in this post-closure reserve, this post-closure liability. We apply that on a per tonnage basis when we charge for the tipping fees, and so we move that at this rolling 10-year average of CPI, the same as we do those tipping fees. And then that amount that we have in our post-closure liability is actual cash dollars. It's not an estimate of what we think we might need to pay in the future. It's an amount that we have continued since opening the landfill to collect and reserve and set aside so that the money is available in the event that we close the landfill in a future year. Financial statements. Again, as I said before, one of the treasurer's duties is to monitor the spending levels and the variances according to the budgets that were set and that the tax rate does provide for. So we produce some quarterly for council and public, they are produced on a monthly basis and provided and reviewed with department heads so that they're aware in their particular departments of where they are in relation to their budget for the year. I spoke of the purchasing policy earlier. I will be bringing it forward for amendments. Basically, the levels at what level do you have to go for quotes and at what level do you have to go to tender, those levels will be changing because of the provincial requirements having been increased over the past number of years. And there is an exception that to the policy that if other criteria need to be more critical in the awarding of goods, so specific quality or there's only one vendor that actually sells or provides the product or the item that you're looking for, then there's opportunity to go outside of that policy. But that's very specific, and it's when basically quality, past performance, that kind of thing plays a part in making sure that what you do purchase is adequate, sufficient, and of quality that's required.
Jennifer, that previous slide, says we get reports quarterly. I thought we only got financial updates every 6 months.
Quarterly.
Okay. Must have missed those meetings.
You still get a new package only for the meeting.
Yeah.
It's really, really long. Maybe you chose not to review it because it was a really long document. So the Minister of the Department of Municipal Affairs approve our temporary borrowing resolutions. Again, timely, we had one of those on the agenda today as well. So you're required to have minister approval that you're going to borrow. So a temporary borrowing resolution is the minister giving approval to municipality to participate in an upcoming debenture. The temporary borrowing resolution can be put in place at any given time, although it does expire at the end of a year. So if you weren't ready to borrow at the end of that year, you would need to renew that temporary borrowing resolution before you could participate in a debenture. And you must have your capital project complete, all expenditures in, before you're allowed to participate in the borrowing. So that is why the most recent phase of Brooklyn, which was in the capital budget in 18-19, was completed in this fall or December, November, December. And we will now participate in the spring 2019 debenture because that's the first offering. There's spring and fall debentures. First offering after the completion of the project. Our current debt service ratio is 2.4, and that would have been on the FCI's ending March 31st, 2018. It was a little bit higher for a while. We had paid down 2 years ago. We paid down a landfill debenture and a sewer debenture that were substantial amounts, so that lowered it then. So, but that's opened up, of course, we're now proposing in upcoming budget years that we borrow and we borrow for the Brooklyn phase. phase this year gone by. And there will be borrowings in the future years as well, as we allow for that sewer reserve to then pay back additional borrowings where that other one was paid off. It opened up that capacity. And our ratio is still really low. 10 to 15% is when the province starts to worry, so.
Any further questions of Jennifer on this presentation? Question five.
When you're dealing with all the figures in our operating budgets and our, you know, the, when we get our statement from the auditors after the work is done, they provide us with an audited financial statement. They provide us with a list of our reserves.
I prepare that. They review it.
They review it, okay.
So our audited statement does include all that.
On that audited statement, does it list our assets? I can't remember because I don't have
it. Total value.
Total value, but not itemized. I'm thinking of equipment. I'm thinking of vehicles and that sort of thing. Like, we don't have a list of what we own, where they are, and how they're used.
It's a long list.
It is it? Can we get it?
We don't have a list, probably. We have to manually do it all.
Yeah, can we do that?
What would be the purpose of it?
Just for knowledge. See a lot of trucks around, you see a lot of vehicles, and then you're asked, people are always asking. It's up front, it's public information.
It is, but it takes a lot of time. I'm just trying to figure out what the purpose of it for is. To
well, just because we know, I'm not that we would be confronted with it, but just so that we have that information. Anybody else feel that way?
There's a total value in our audited financial statements. There's a value for landfill equipment. There's a value for public works
but it's
equipment.
It's a big chunk of our money. It's a big chunk of our assets.
Is this not something that will come out automatically through our asset management plan that we're supposedly working on now or have to work on or should be submitting it? Like,
well, I mean, I can tell you how many hundreds of feet of sewer pipe we have in the ground,
yeah.
You know.
No.
There's a certain amount of detail.
That would go to answering that? Where are we at with asset management?
We're nowhere with asset management.
Okay.
Other than Jennifer and Brad have a good handle on what we have now,
right.
As far as the formal program, we don't have much because the province hasn't established what the criteria is going to be.
Oh, okay, so we're,
so
still,
we're
waiting
still waiting
for that.
To
there's no timeline set. No timeline set for that?
It's like 2022 or 2023.
Yeah, it's towards the end of the current gas tax agreement.
Okay.
But we could go do all kinds of research and come up with a big fancy chart.
Yep.
And the province will come back and say, well, that's not how we want it. We want it in a different format.
Yep.
And you have to go through all that
with
again.
So it's not just doing it until the province establishes it.
I agree.
I'm trying to understand why, if we have 20 trucks, why does it matter if we have 20 trucks?
Well, it does. It does matter. I mean, we have a construction crew that go out and do work, and that must be all separate. It must be kind of its own calculation of the value of all that.
Well, I mean, you'd see individual pieces of equipment appear in the 5-year capital plan ongoing because they all have a specific purpose.
Mm-hmm.
They all have a specific use in the municipality, and they all have a specific timeline for their depreciation. And when their useful life is over, then they're replaced. So you can see them coming up through the 5-year capital plan, you know, varying years. And they will all be tagged as whether they have a plow on them or not, or whether they salt, or whether they're the building inspector's truck, or whether they're the bylaw enforcement officer's vehicle, as they come through the 5-year capital plan.
So today we gain one vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, it's a replacement. Normally, we're replacing one with another. We never retain the old one. In this case, we're preparing and hoping that we're going to have a second building inspector at some point and that we will have some overlap. But when that overlap is done and our prior inspector retires, then that other, the old vehicle would be salvage valued. Of course, at that time, we wouldn't retain it. It's just because we're hoping to have an overlap and a training, an amount of training time for someone new coming on board.
So, when we have, is it possible that when we get monies through the programs, our funding programs, is there equipment that is purchased with that is kind of an
nothing. We buy everything from our own resources.
And then we book depreciation values in reserve so that we don't have to borrow for any of our equipment. We have an ongoing amount in depreciation for the 12 or 15 year useful life that is put in a reserve so that we have the money on hand and we don't borrow for any of the equipment. And we spoke during potential budget pressures about the compactor that would be required for landfill and how we were anticipating it would cost $600,000 to replace, and now knowing that it's going to be $1.1 million to replace, we're looking at the alternative of rebuilding it instead so that we don't have the, all that additional outlay of cost for it. So we always use equipment past what would be booked or accounting rules would say would be useful life. We've always used our equipment well past its useful life and then explore the alternatives that are cost savings, like rebuilding this compactor instead of purchasing new.
All the equipment that we have then has to be registered somewhere, right? To register motor vehicles or have a license plate or something like that.
If they're road vehicles, they do. Mm-hmm. They have plates.
Then that should be difficult to get that information.
I think one of the big things is just that the
public perception.
We get a lot of questions about vehicles. That's the big thing.
Every vehicle has a use.
And everything else. These, all those things that we need, that, you know, with who knows what kind of compactor we need. And that nobody ever questions those things. But when they see a lot of vehicles driving around, they'd like to know do we have too many vehicles here for what it is, or are the vehicles too much for what it needs to be? Do you need to have the four-wheel drive with such and such and such and such on it, or if that's the question we get, right? So that would be the question, only thing we can come back and say, being accountable.
Yep.
That would be nice to know, just so people keep off our backs, too.
But people aren't going to get off your backs, because they're going to say, well, why do you have a 4x4? You don't need a 4x4, you only need a 4x2.
Yeah, but also, too, it shows we're doing the right thing. So if all of a sudden we're saying that somebody, say Bill Layton said, I'm going to have a 4x4 and a great big jacked up truck and stuff. I said, what has he got that thing over here for?
Yeah, well, it's never going to be a jacked up truck.
No, but I'm just saying, that you...
Everything has a use, and we wouldn't purchase anything that wasn't useful.
It's all perception, accountability. That's the whole thing. There isn't anybody doing anything wrong. It's just that perception.
No. Right.
Right, nobody's doing anything wrong. Everything has
That's
a useful
right.
life. And
one
has a purpose.
To keep in mind that we have four-wheel drives because we live in an area that has snow in the winter and people still have to be on the roads working for the region of Queens.
And plowing that snow.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is if they look and they said there's a truck here sitting, it's a $75,000 truck, and we could have got away with maybe a $25,000 truck.
You
so
see what the price
it?
Of the trucks are, though. They come to council for approval.
Yep.
There wouldn't be any 75,000 trucks.
I understand the reason you raised that. We do appreciate them and keep them quite a few years so that they're basically worthless when we do trade them in. They go from perhaps from works department to grounds crew and then out the door to the junkyard.
And you'll notice, too, a lot of them have two people in their cabs because they share them.
No, I was just voicing what mm-hmm. Susan's saying. That's what we get.
I have another question which you posed to me, if I can do it now, is are all of these vehicles kept in a compound, or how are they utilized? I mean, how are they stored, or do they take them home?
That was asked this morning and answered.
Pardon me?
That was asked this morning and answered.
Where?
It was.
Right here.
You asked Brad.
You asked Brad the same question.
Well, there's some that aren't in compounds. He didn't say all of them.
No, some of them are. Supervisors take their vehicles home.
They're also on call and can end up out in the middle of the night, so.
Yeah, okay. So there's 3-4 supervisors?
They share the pager amongst 5 of them, so.
Okay.
I mean, there's water breaks and sewer breaks and.
Okay. I'd like to discuss also at some point, not now, but at some point about, do we have policies regarding vehicles? And one big thing is signage, and we talked about that in the past, and it's never been really dealt with.
Well, I think that's a whole question altogether. because yeah. sometimes vehicles aren't really supposed to be, sometimes it's smoking in vehicles and they're not supposed to be, you know, it's a whole kettle of fish.
Well, let's leave that discussion for a later
discussion.
Date.
Yeah.
And can be brought up.
That's
at
what
a,
I
a
asked. We should
time.
Do this at another time.
So does anyone have any more questions on Jennifer's presentation?
No.
Good.
Thanks,
Jen.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Very good.
We need
that
a motion to adjourn.
Thanks.
So moved by Councilor Fisk, seconded by Deputy Mayor Kelly. Any discussion? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. We are adjourned.
Oh, God.